each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hello there, everyone. Welcome to the Winds of Change on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. Father Tom Coyce here with you once again. Hope we're coming in nice and clear there. Yeah, it's so nice to have all the people fit into this little studio here. It's the month of July when I'm recording this, whether or not you're catching this in July or not. Or on a past. Remember, you can go to Podbean and look for Winds of Change show and look for Wearing Wrinkling Days with Father Coyce. Check out Father Bush and all the other wonderful people that share this hour with you.
I am the gift.
I need to give you a gift here. It's the month of July. We've celebrated the independence. So let's see. I'm going to introduce my topic with something like this. America, I love you, America. You say, can you guess who that is? Oh, yeah, you'd be right if you said that was Ray Charles, right? The distinctive voice of Ray Charles. I start with that because during July, I do think of the themes of our American heritage. And being a priest, I like to sense and find those aspects of our heritage that, let's just sort of be blunt or honest, that make the Catholic heart proud. I think we all would all like to see the church, the faith that we hold to as being significant, and more so than just everyone trying to jump on a successful bandwagon, which you could sort of say the United States of America is. We got to get down to specifics and see where faith in Christ, especially as articulated through our my Catholic and many of yours, I'm sure, though I'm sure we have some non-Catholic people listening, but through as the faith in Jesus Christ is articulated and lived and taught and administered through Catholicism, comes through American history. So I think probably some of you have heard this story. It's a famous, well, getting famous. I'm going to try to make it famous. Oh, yeah.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, of course, that would be 1776. The revolution, American. It is a very interesting theme. There's so much. I know I've talked about it before, but I'm going to talk about it again. And actually, this is the story of the mysterious woman who appeared to George Washington at Valley Forge. Are you aware of that? It's somewhat of a Hidden Mystery. I, for one, believe the story. It was printed in a little book. First printed in a newspaper article way back in 1859. How about that?
Wow.
Way back in 1859.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
In order... It is tremendously brain-wrinkling. In order to get the background here, we got to set the stage here for this amazing vision. There's nothing, no other way you can call it. And being someone who believes that the Blessed Mother has appeared to many people, I'm even one who has a belief that our Blessed Mother appeared to Pope John Paul II. He's not a hugely talked about issue, but I can certainly see how much strength he had and the wisdom that he had. Not perfect. There are some little glitches in his pontificate, namely like allowing or not saying anything when the statue of Buddha was put on top of a tabernacle. I think it was in Assisi when he was trying to get the world religions together, right? Remember that? I would say that was a little mistake. Some people might call it a big mistake, and it may be a fairly big mistake, but I realize that saints can make mistakes. Our leaders can make mistakes, do something wrong, don't have 100% batting average, and yet still be saintly great leaders. Something of the sort of the last president we had, huh? I think he did a lot of great things, though he may have had a few mistakes, especially in his way he would, some of the tweets or what have you, you know, all that stuff. But anyways, put that aside. We're going to go back to 1777 after the Revolutionary War was started. 1776, of course, is the Declaration of Independence, but after the colonies declared independence, then, of course, they had to fight the war against Britain, which didn't necessarily like that declaration, right? So it was in the winter of 1777, prior to George Washington's vision at Valley Forge. That's why I'm reading from this website called 2percentsurvival.com, 2percentsurvival.com, George Washington's vision. So the Continental Army had suffered two major defeats and battles, one at Brandywine and the other at Germantown. Remember those names? The British forces occupied Philadelphia, which was the capital at the time, and a brutal winter, unknown to everyone, was coming, and food as well as clothing was scarce. The situation grew desperate as winter set in on the plains of Pennsylvania. There was near famine, and temperatures fell far below zero. Winds blew with gale forces. Some soldiers had no shoes and wrapped their feet in rags. Trails of blood could be seen on the snow where they would walk. Amputations were common. Disease set in, and as many as 3,000 soldiers died. A little aside, usually we say troops, right? This is a complete aside, I'm sorry, but I just have to get this off my chest. When we say 3,000 troops died, the word troops is in plural. Whenever I hear troops, I think of like a brigade or a group of people. Why would a single person be called a troops? little language mystery there for me. So anyways, as opposed to 3,000 troops, you could say 3,000 soldiers. So at that time, defeat and surrender seemed inevitable, right? The British forces could have destroyed the Continental Army before the winter, but chose not to, which was a grave mistake on their part, maybe inspired by the Holy Spirit to wait. we can think that, right? They instead decided to wait out the winter and prepare to take care of the colonists in the spring. So here's the lead up to this article that was first published. So the guy who was at George Washington's side during much of the revolution is a guy by the name of Anthony Sherman. So this author saw Anthony Sherman on the 4th of July of 1859, right before the Civil War, in Independence Square in Philadelphia. Anthony Sherman was 99 years old at the time, so that would make him be born in 1760, right, before the American Revolution. An old teenager, young adult, young 20-year-old during the Revolution. Though he was very feeble, he had a strength in his eyes as he gazed upon Independence Hall, which he came to visit at least one last time, right? And he says to the reporter, "Let's go into the hall. I want to tell you of an incident in George Washington's life, one which no one alive knows except myself. And if you live, you will before long see it verified." He's referring to the coming Civil War. George Washington would hardly have been the type of man that one would expect to be seeking visionary manifestations or to be easily taken in by them. From the opening of the Revolution, we experienced all phases of fortune, good and ill. One time victorious, another conquered. The darkest period we had, I think, and this is Anthony Sherman talking, was when Washington, after several reverses, retreated to Valley Forge, where he resolved to pass the winter of 1777. "Ah, I have often seen the tears coursing down our dear commander's care-worn cheeks as he would be conversing with a confidential officer about the condition of his poor soldiers. You have doubtlessly heard the story of Washington's on going into the thicket to pray. Well, it was not only true, but he used to often go and pray in secret for aid and comfort from God, the interposition of whose divine providence brought us safely through the darkest days of tribulation." That's the setup of the vision that this camp aide is going to tell. And before our break here, I want to say something too about just being a person of faith and a person who feels very patriotic, according to the time. Number one, it's a challenging time, and there's sort of a battle for the American soul. And, of course, even the word soul is a religious word, and part of the battle is over those who believe in the reality of the invisible, reality of the immaterial, the reality of spiritual realities, namely like soul, like heaven, hell, grace, angels, things like that. But I think a certain, I want to defend my patriotism by pointing to experience I've had throughout my years. As a priest, I've been in parish situations where I have wanted to and felt my duty to and felt my honor to help different ethnic Catholic groups be proud of their national heritage. And in my life, it has been many Mexicans. Porque yo aprendí español desde unos años. I learned Spanish a while back. And so in many years of my priesthood, I had to put my American patriotism aside and help Mexican Catholics hold on to and support their Mexican heritage, even as they lived here in the United States, some of whom assimilated very well, others not so well. Also, many wonderful Polish Americans, they holding on to their Polish heritage and finding a beautiful home here. And also another aside, Lithuanians. I have that also experienced people moving here from Lithuania. But you can fill in the blanks of so many ethnic groups, right? And as a priest, I had to put aside my American patriotism for a while. And now that I feel I'm not at a parish that has either Spanish masses nor Polish masses, though our new reality out here in Lamont, there are Polish masses, and I do know a lot of wonderful, wonderful Polish people. As a matter of fact, that's there's a little secret. If you're ever out in the area of Lamont and you happen to go to confession at St. Cyril Methodius, inside the room that is now confessional, you know, actually, I have to take that back. It just lost its designation as a confessional. It's now a closet filled with stuff. Yeah, that's what I said when I saw. There's two rooms right next to each other. There still is a confessional room there. Unfortunately, if you don't have that many priests, you don't need that many confessionals. However, it might seem to. The reason I'm pointing this out is that they painted on the wall some wonderful Polish people wearing American military uniforms, and how they saw the need or the duty, the importance of defending the United States, and there's some pictures on the wall in that room. It looks like, actually, too, I was staring at that little picture. It looks like there's a battleship out on the ocean, and it looks like it's the Bismarck. and, of course, that was the great battleship that was supposed to be unsinkable. Prime Minister... said we must sink the Bismarck, right? So I defend my sense of patriotism because, as I said, I put aside my American patriotism to help others, and I think it's right and it's honorable to try to find the right kind of patriotism, not necessarily my country right or wrong. That could be a kind of patriotism. You can love your country, good and bad, but you don't defend your country right or wrong. You defend your country when you're right, and you try to correct it when you think it's wrong, right? So with that kind of caveat, we gotta see this beautiful story of George Washington. As I say, maybe you've heard it before. Even if you have heard it, it's good to hear it again. If you haven't heard it, it'll blow your socks off, really. As I said, I believe this is an accurate description of something that really happened back in 1777. With that introduction, let's take our first break, right, Nick? We will take our first break. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Koska Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Koska is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
More Ray Charles here. Isn't that a precious song we all know and love? Our country is very much in a crossroad, very much in a tipping point, very much in a crucible. That especially the Christian heritage and us Catholics have to be very much concerned about that. It's slipping away. We need to solidify. We need to recover its importance. And this story that I'm about to share, I think, sort of highlights it. And if you believe it, you'll see that not only Jesus is looking out after us and we need to hold on to Jesus, we need to hold on to the Blessed Mother. And that's something that Protestant America has been a little lax on. We'll just say it that way. This story might help some of my Protestant Christian brothers and sisters who love this country very much, obviously, could profit from. So this is the way the story was written back in 1859 by a journalist who talked with a man who was at George Washington's side for much of the Revolutionary War, a guy by the name of Anthony Sherman. So he writes this. One day, I remember it well, the chilly winds whistled through the leafless trees. Though the sky was cloudless and the sun shone brightly, George Washington remained in his quarters nearly all the afternoon, alone. When he came out, I noticed that his face was a shade paler than usual. There seemed to be something on his mind of more than ordinary importance. Returning just after dusk, he dispatched an orderly to the quarters of an officer I mentioned who was presently in attendance. After a preliminary conversation of about a half an hour, Washington, gazing upon his companion with that strange look of dignity which he alone could command, said to the latter, "I do not know whether it is owing to the anxiety of my mind or what, But this afternoon, as I was sitting at this table, engaged in preparing a dispatch, something seemed to disturb me. Looking up, I beheld, standing opposite me, a singularly beautiful female. So astonished was I, for I had given strict orders not to be disturbed, that it was some moments before I found language to inquire into the cause of her presence. A second, a third, and even a fourth time, I did repeat my question, but received no answer from my mysterious visitor, except a slight raising of her eyes. By this time, I felt strange sensations spreading through me. I would have risen, but the riveted gaze of the being before me rendered volition impossible. I essayed once more to address her, but my tongue had become useless. Even thought itself had become paralyzed. A new influence, mysterious, potent, irresistible, took possession of me. All I can do was to gaze steadily, vacantly, at my unknown visitor. Gradually, the surrounding atmosphere seemed as though becoming filled with sensations and luminous. Everything about me seemed to ratify the mysterious visitor herself, becoming more airy, yet more distinct to my sight than before. I now began to feel as one dying, or rather to experience the sensations which I have sometimes imagined accompanying disillusion. I did not think, I did not reason, I did not move. All were alike impossible. I was only conscious of gazing fixedly, vacantly, at my companion. Presently, I heard a voice saying, "Son of the Republic, look and learn." While at the same time, my visitor extended her arm earnestly. I now beheld a heavy white vapor at some distance, rising fold upon fold. This gradually dissipated, and I looked upon a strange scene. Before me lay spread out in one vast plain all the countries of the world, Europe, Asia, Africa, and America. I saw rolling and tossing between Europe and America the billows of the Atlantic, and between Asia and America lay the Pacific. "Son of the Republic," she said, the same mysterious voice as before, "look and learn." At that moment, I beheld a dark, shadowy being, like an angel, standing, or rather floating in midair between Europe and America, dipping water out of the ocean in the hollow of each hand, and sprinkling some on America with his right hand, while with his left hand he cast some on Europe. Immediately a cloud raised from these countries and joined in mid-ocean. For a while it remained stationary, then moved slowly westward until it enveloped America in its murky folds. Sharp flashes of lightning gleamed through it at intervals, and I heard the smothering groans and cries of the American people. A second time, the angel dipped water from the ocean and sprinkled it out as before. The dark cloud was then drawn back to the ocean, in whose heavy billows it sank from view. A third time, I heard the mysterious voice saying, "Son of the Republic, look and learn." I cast my eyes upon America and beheld villages and towns and cities springing up one after another until the whole land from the Atlantic to the Pacific was dotted with them. Again, I heard the mysterious voice say, "Son of the Republic, the end of the century cometh. Look and learn." At this, the dark, shadowy angel turned his face southward, and from Africa I saw ill-omened specter approach our land. It flitted slowly over every town and city of the latter. The inhabitants presently set themselves in battle array against each other. As I continued looking, I saw a bright angel on whose brow rested a crown of light, on which was traced the word Union, bearing the American flag, which he placed between the divided nation, and said, "Remember, ye are brethren." Instantly the inhabitants, casting from their weapons, became friends once more and united around the national standard. I'm going to stop right there. We're almost at another break, but there's a little more. A third vision comes to George Washington.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Let's wrinkle our brain there for a little bit. Obviously, that first vision of the battle between the dark cloud between Europe and America was this great divide. And I have to say this, as a Catholic who believes in the fullness of the truth of the church that Jesus established, there's a kind of thought about the founding of America which goes like this. Catholicism dominated Europe from the beginning until 1775, or from the time of Jesus until the colonies, okay? And that religion, known as Catholicism, dominated the European landscape, and so much contributed to the malaise and the problems of Europe that Protestant Christians had to flee Catholic Europe in order to start a new country based on Protestant Christianity. And therefore, the success, the beauty, the wonder of America that we know of today is primarily a result of the truer form of Christianity found in Protestantism being the roots of the American experiment, which came as precisely a rejection of Catholicism in Europe. So two things I have to say about this before we take our break, okay? Number one, to think that Catholicism dominated Europe from the time of Jesus until 1776, we'll just say, or the colonial times, is to be so ignorant of history that it's almost shameful. Oh, because to say that Catholicism dominated Europe for the first 400 years is a joke. It didn't dominate. It won. It fought. It eventually converted, as it were, the Roman Empire. But those first 400 years were in no way, shape, or form 400 years of Catholic dominance in Europe. It was the pagan Europe, pagan leaders in the form of emperors and what have you, that dominated Europe. And it was the strong faith of the earlier Christians that brought about a great conversion. Again, from paganism to Christianity. And at that time, as the Roman Empire became Christian, the only Christians were Catholics. So, and then to say that even after the year 500, 600, 700. Remember, 800 is an important date to remember, my friends. 800 is the year that the Holy Roman Empire had its leader. I'm talking about Charlemagne, of course. So from 800 to cut out that swatch of history from 800 to 1500, where the Protestant Reformation came, what is that, 700 years? To say that Catholicism dominated European history through those years is also a joke, because it was a battle every century, every decade of every century, that the church and the state were in constant, shall we say dialogue? Shall we say partnership? We could mix it up in either way. Sometimes it was just a bitter fight, but it was a family fight in that sense. And then lastly, to think that the people who fled Europe to start the United States and this in the United States in America were fleeing primarily from Catholic Europe is also a sad reading of history, because it was Protestant England that persecuted Protestant Puritans. And so the early colonists were fleeing not from Catholic Europe, they were fleeing from Protestant Europe. and so it is that I can't accept that typical narrative. And so I pray for, and I think this is a time, especially in this difficult time where Christianity itself is being questioned, where there can be a new coming together of Catholics and Protestant denomination, Christians of Protestant denominations, but there should be an era of Protestants accepting more Catholicism. The era from Vatican II until today, the spirit of ecumenical work has primarily been the spirit of Catholics trying to bend over backwards to become more Protestant in their outlook and in their administrative approaches to church. And so now there needs to be a shift. We have done 50 years of Catholics trying to be nice to the Protestants. Now we need 50 years of Protestants trying to take on a number of Catholic traditions, beliefs, and ways of life. So anyways, okay, let's take another break here and we'll continue with the third vision of George Washington. I'm Father Tom Coise. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
He helps us from understand EWTN Publishing. Living the Scriptures by Mother Angelica is a collection of some of Mother Angelica's best on-air presentations and extemporaneous meditations. You will discover that Scripture is not a complicated puzzle meant for pensive biblical scholars, but a divine guide for our everyday spiritual life. And The House Was Filled with the Fragrance of the Perfume by Cardinal Fernando Filoni, the Grand Master of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem, reflects on the life, the beliefs, the values, and the choices for a knight and a dame. Living the Scriptures and The House Was Filled with the Fragrance of the Perfume. Available now at EWTNRC.com. By Catholic, shop EWTNRC.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for listening to listener-supported Winds of Change. Let's do our best to keep radio shows like this on the air, where we could listen some brain-wrinkling thoughts about faith in our society today. I'm trying to share a story that I got to confess to you, I think is real, and it points to a very Catholic story in our American culture. Explains why there's a lot of rumors, and there's a theory that believes George Washington had a deathbed conversion to Catholicism. He was close to a Jesuit priest, and the Jesuit priest spent many hours with George Washington, and as he was dying, many days in and out, and that Jesuit priest famously said it was all taken care of. It's a little bit mysterious, but certainly could mean he was baptized or received into the church, maybe even with a confession. Okay, so here's back again. George Washington at Valley Forge, and he's seeing this mysterious woman. He had a first vision, which kind of like gave him confidence that he was going to win the American Revolution. Then he is given a vision that describes a great civil war, and the reference to the cloud from Africa obviously gives you the interpretation that it had to do with the slavery issue. And then a third one, which has yet to come, my friends, but here's how it goes. So he writes, "And again I heard the mysterious voice saying, 'Son of the Republic, look and learn.' At this, the dark, shadowy angel placed a trumpet to his mouth and blew three distinct blasts. And taking water from the ocean, he sprinkled it upon Europe, Asia, and Africa. Then my eyes beheld a fearful scene. From each of these countries arose thick black clouds that were soon joined into one. And throughout this mass, there gleamed a dark red light by which I saw hordes of armed men who, moving with the cloud, marched by land and sailed by sea to America, which country was enveloped in the volume of cloud. And I dimly saw these vast armies devastate the whole country and burn the villages, towns, and cities that I beheld springing up. As my ears listened to the thundering of the cannon, clashing of swords, and the shouts and cries of millions in mortal combat, I heard again the mysterious voice saying, 'Son of the Republic, look and learn.' When the voice had ceased, the dark, shadowy angel placed his trumpet once more to his mouth and blew a long and fearful blast. Instantly, a light as of a thousand suns shone down from above me and pierced and broke into fragments the dark cloud which enveloped America. At the same moment, the angel upon whose head still shone the word Union, and who bore our national flag in one hand and a sword in the other, descended from the heavens, attended by legions of white spirits. These immediately joined the inhabitants of America, who I perceived were well nigh overcome, but who immediately, taking courage again, closed up their broken ranks and renewed the battle. Again, amid the fearful noise of the conflict, I heard the mysterious voice saying, 'Son of the Republic, look and learn.' As the voice ceased, the shadowy angel for the last time dipped water from the ocean and sprinkled it upon America. Instantly, the dark cloud rolled back, together with the armies it had brought, leaving the inhabitants of the land victorious. Then once more, I beheld the villages, towns, and cities springing up where I had seen them before, while the bright angel, the angel, planting the blue standard he had brought in the midst of them, cried with a loud voice, "While the stars remain and the heavens send down dew upon the earth, so long shall the union last." I've got to stop there for a second. Why? What do you think a blue standard would mean from that angel? Could it mean a dedication to our Blessed Mother, whose color is always so often associated with blue? And then the angel saying that, "As long as the stars remain in the heavens, send down dew upon the earth, so long shall the union last." Oh, let's pray, my friends, that we can see a new version, a new era of strong faithfulness in our country, which is at stake, shall we say, right? And taking from his brow the crown on which blazoned the word union, he placed it upon the standard, while the people, kneeling down, said, "Amen." Well, look at that, people kneeling down. Again, that's a kind of a Catholic reference, because if you compare Catholic churches versus Protestant churches, you will find only Catholic churches have kneelers, and actually a lot of Catholic churches have removed their kneelers. That's one of the signs of what I was talking about, the ecumenical spirit, in an attempt to show Protestant Christians that we want to be friendly and to be united. Many churches have taken out our kneelers and said, "See, we don't believe in kneeling either." But perhaps now the new era of unification, instead of taking out more kneelers, we should be putting in kneelers. If there's any Protestant ministers listening to this broadcast today, just an idea. I'm just saying, right? You might be able to bring about greater unity if we believed in that beautiful praying posture. Okay, so here's a little interpretation, and then we'll go to our final break because time is running out. "The scene instantly began to fade and dissolve, and I at last saw nothing but the rising, curling vapor I had at first beheld." This is George Washington talking again. "This also disappeared. I found myself once more gazing upon the mysterious visitor, who in the same voice I had heard before said, 'Son of the Republic, what you have seen is thus interpreted. Three great perils will come upon the Republic. The most fearful is the third.'" The comment on his word "third" is, "The help against the third peril comes in the shape of divine assistance." Apparently, the second advent, "passing which the whole world united shall not prevail against her." Wow. The whole world united together is poised to try to bring America down.
Wow.
And yet,
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
And yet, with divine assistance, the United States will prevail. "Let every child of the Republic learn to live for his God, his land, and union." With these words, the vision vanished, and I started from my seat and felt that I had seen a vision wherein had been shown to me the birth, progress, and destiny of the United States. Such, my friends, concluded the venerable narrator, were the words I heard from Washington's own lips, and America will do well to profit by them. Doesn't that blow your mind away? It blows my mind.
Wow.
My friends, that wrinkles my brain.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It shows we to say that we will face another great battle is almost like duh. We're building up to it, but that we need the divine assistance. We have to pray so strongly, my friends, for divine assistance and to use our minds. And we can unite under a spirit of God and the Blessed Mother. And so many the morals that we stand up and hold for, and Catholicism does have such powerful, beautiful, deep teachings about the moral life, but they're being rejected 1, 2, 3 so often, even within our church. So let's do our one last break, and then I want to remind you of two great themes that are part of our American culture that really are rooted in Catholic theology as opposed to typical Protestant theology, all right? So let's take this last break, and we'll get to natural law and the principle of subsidiarity, okay? I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the 3 pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I hope you can put your socks back on after you blew your socks off with that story of, was it the Blessed Mother who appeared to George Washington at Valley Forge to strengthen him in that great moment of peril, as it were? I don't think there's any other feasible explanation. And for that, we got to listen. Remember this. One of my favorite Blessed Mother songs. Okay, I had to play a Marian song there. That's Holy is His Name, because there can be no other explanation of a woman appearing to George Washington in the privacy of his tent. And so in an attempt to promote a new phase of ecumenism, a new era of ecumenism where Protestant Christians bend over backwards to be more in line with Catholicism, where the past 50 years we've been bending over backwards to be more in line with Protestant culture, accepting the Blessed Mother, praying the rosary is one of those things. But I got to give Timothy Gordon credit for this last. The issue of subsidiarity, Timothy Gordon says, when you look at it as a political thought process, a way to organize a society, he says that is a Catholic idea. How is it found in American culture? The basic construction of states and federalism, many states organized together, but with a certain kind of controlling power that would have some controlling power over all the states, is in essence the principle of subsidiarity. And another way of appreciating how this is more Catholic than Protestant is the idea that you could also use the word hierarchy. The principle of subsidiarity is the political manifestation of the idea of hierarchy. Obviously, Catholicism has a very strong structure of hierarchy, Pope, cardinal, bishop, priests, and all the down the line, as it were. We all are familiar with that. And Protestantism has rejected that by and large. But it's reflected in the United States, and especially at its founding, that it had been a great debate in the beginning, and it's still a great debate now. How much authority does headquarters have? How much authority can the states have? We're seeing that played out now, the red state, blue states issue. Quite frankly, the way when the headquarters is turning us away from Christian ways and Christian principles, then we have to say they're overstepping their boundaries, as it were. The idea of organizing society with a headquarters that doesn't deal with the things that the lower levels can deal with is exactly what subsidiarity is supposed to mean. And so there's fewer things for the headquarters, or in this case, Washington, D.C., to have control over, especially when there's difficulties in harmonizing between states. So there shouldn't be that much control, except when there are difficulties. Why this is a more Catholic form of administration than Protestant is seen in the fact that Protestant churches have always dealt with their conflicts by starting a new church. The difficulties that you run into in a Protestant congregation have often been solved by let's agree to separate and form a new denomination. But we're being tested because we can't do that with nation. We can't just keep dividing our nation. So it's a little bit of a reflection in this month of July, because we want to promote our love for this country and point in the direction of where we got to go with it. You have been listening to Listener Support, the Winds of Change, on AM 750 WNDZ. This is Father Tom Kouros.
So sit on the fence. Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? The winds have changed. We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.